Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra. No, it's not. Hello and welcome to another Arsecast. Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. That, my friends, is getting the new year off to an auspicious start. How are you? Happy New Year. I hope 2019 brings you everything you could possibly want and desire. Health, happiness, good fortune, prosperity, and of course, this is where you insert that thing about football that you desperately want to happen, such as Tottenham Stadium never gets built. Pochettino leaves and they appoint Jose Mourinho. Arsenal sign defenders who can defend. Pep Guardiola wakes up one morning with Michael Bolton's 1980s hair, and in a kind of reverse Samson thing, it makes him terrible. Troy Deeney loses both cojones in a workplace accident.
Torreira.
Mike Dean retires. And many more. The world is your oyster in 1929. Or indeed, 2019, for that is the year that we are in right now. I'm really not making a good go of this. This is not brilliant, I have to say. But in my defense, I have a cold. I have a kind of head cold type thing, and I can only really hear out of one ear, which is not ideal when you're doing this kind of thing. So, you know, bear with me, and if I'm slightly confused, it could be a fever. It could be, I don't know what, could just be me being crap, which is probably the, what's his name? The razor guy. Occam's razor. Wow. Maybe I should start again, do you think? I'm not sure I should. I've come this far, and I'm just going to plow on regardless and see where this particular podcast takes us. A little bit later on, I will be talking to the head of the Blackpool Supporters Trust, because obviously Arsenal are playing Blackpool. Did I say Blackburn or Blackpool back there? I think I said Blackburn. No, I didn't. I just went back and checked, and I said Blackpool. Fuck. I don't think I've ever made this many mistakes and left them in the podcast. Anyway, the Blackpool Supporters Trust, we're playing Blackpool in the FA Cup on Saturday, and the home attendance is likely to be very, very small, because there's a lot going on at Blackpool Football Club, and not much of it is good. If you're a fan of Blackpool, we'll find out exactly what and why the home fans are staying away from their games, and what Arsenal fans can do to support them on Saturday, because when you hear the story, you'll realise that it is something that football fans should get together on. Bad ownership, let me just say that, to give you a bit of a hint as to what is coming. That will be a little bit later on in the show, and of course we'll be looking back on the Fulham game, looking back over the festive period, which I think didn't go quite as well as we might have liked. Even if you weren't confident of getting a result against Liverpool, the 5-1 defeat was pretty disheartening, because we were so competitive with them in the first game at the Emirates in early November. Now, I know quite a bit has changed. We're not as solid defensively as we were back then. There have been some injuries. Rob Holding is out. Hector Bellerin is out. Nacho Monreal is out. Mustafi is in. Lichtsteiner is in. So, you know, there have been some problems for Unai Emery to deal with, but it was a damaging result. But I also think the Brighton game as well is one, when you look back on it and you think, even if we weren't going to do well against Liverpool, you looked at Burnley, Brighton and Fulham as three games from which we could have taken 9 points, and 9 points from 12 is obviously healthier than 7 points from 12. If you do the science on it, if you get right down to it, work out all the permutations and everything else, it's two better. Two better. And we can't afford to pass up chances to be two better when the fight for the top four is as tight as it is. It is very, very tight. Chelsea are in there. Manchester United, 4 wins from 4 under Solskjaer. Boo. As I'm telling you, that's why I'm so upset by the sacking of Mourinho. It's actually made Manchester United players realise that they can play football again. They do have a strong squad. However, people wanted to laugh and point at the way things were going under Mourinho, which we all did. We all did, and I think now we have to take some responsibility for what's happened. Maybe we should have laughed a little less. Maybe we should have been less crowy from the sidelines. Maybe we shouldn't have mocked. Maybe we should have just kept it quiet. And he would still be in charge, and they wouldn't be right up our arses, which is not where I want them to be. I'd prefer if they were further back, because they do have good players and a big squad, and they're in the mix now for the top four. And it looks like it could well be a shootout between us, Chelsea, and Manchester United. And when you look at the way things are with us, how we're struggling a bit to cope with injuries at the back, we're struggling to cope without Danny Welbeck in the squad, we're struggling without Mesut Ozil in the squad, a good Mesut Ozil, I should say. There's no Henrik Mkhitaryan, which would be fine if you had an adequate replacement for him, or a better replacement for him, but we don't really. Aaron Ramsey, is he going to be in and out of the team now that this whole Juventus thing is going down? So it is shaping up to be a really, really tough fight for that top four. Of course, we do have another way into the Champions League, which is via the Europa League with our specialist Europa League winning manager, Unai Emery, who, of course, has won it 3 times with Sevilla, 3 times in a row with Sevilla. So, you know, you could have some confidence that he could guide a team to another final, and another European trophy on the Arsenal trophy cabinet would be very welcome indeed, not least because it does get you back into the Champions League. But bread and butter stuff is the Premier League, and we're having to try and cope with a squad that feels a little bit threadbare at the moment, and a squad which I think needs some investment in January. So maybe that's something we can talk about now with our guests. All that and much more. Joining me, a man whose videos you might have seen on Twitter. Before every game, he creates what some people might call an inspirational pre-game video, and they're always really, really funny. So it's a pleasure to have him on the show. It's Frimpon. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I have to say, these videos are they're outstanding. They're funny. They're overwhelmingly positive. And I think what I like most about them is that sometimes, perhaps a bit more often than you would like, you kind of have to eat some humble pie afterwards. But I think that's part of the charm.
I mean, yeah, because come on, it's football. You're going to lose. You're going to win some. Yeah. But obviously, like, the coaches don't go into the change rooms and be like, you know what, lads, it's Liverpool. We're going to lose today.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just go out and see what, like, they go in positive thinking they're going to do something on the day. So that's what I tried to bring to it. And obviously, when it doesn't work out, I've got to kind of backtrack and kind of make light and make fun of the situation. So, yeah, I love doing it, man. That's the whole point, really.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think the thing is you get so much reaction from other people on Twitter, probably other fans of other clubs, when you're doing a video and it doesn't work out the way it should work out for Arsenal. All of a sudden, you're on the receiving end. But I guess most of them will realize that it's entertainment. You're not necessarily being quite as serious as they might think.
You know, it's funny. It's like, most of the videos, I'm hyping up Arsenal. So I don't get why, when we're playing certain teams, they get triggered by what I'm saying. Like, I haven't said anything bad about your club. But like, oh, yeah, you've lost. I was like, I was just trying to hype up my team. Like, what am I supposed to do? What, just not hype up Arsenal? I support them. Yeah. Like, what's going on here? So I find it funny when I just ignore it, really. But I like it. I like the banner as well. Sometimes they're good. Sometimes they actually have good comebacks. So I enjoyed them as well.
It's brilliant. If you haven't checked it out, the Twitter handle is @FrimponLine. And I think it would be fair to say you do actually sometimes take a bit of a pop at some of the other teams, but in a friendly way. It's not, there's nothing particularly mean about it, but you know, I can see why they might come back at you if we don't get the result.
I don't know why they come back. I'll probably come back at me as well. There are sometimes I do say stuff that would probably rub people up the wrong way, but hey, it's banner, it's football. That's the whole point. And like, you make fun of my team, I make fun of your team, and then we go for a drink after.
Yeah, Maybe. Or maybe not. You stay over there and I'll stay over here. It's fine.
If you're Tottenham, maybe not.
Yeah. So, Kamir, tell me how you're feeling about the festive period where we played four games, 1-2, drew one, lost one. You know, on paper, probably a little disappointing when you think about the Brighton result. But how do you view it based on the fact that we did have something of an injury crisis over the Christmas period in terms of the defenders available to us? It's all been a bit makeshift back there.
Yeah, I mean, it could have gone, well, I say it could have gone worse. We got smacked 5-1 at Liverpool. We always struggle in December, innit? It's never straightforward for us in December. So I'm not surprised. I am surprised of the 5-1. Definitely, I thought we'd go there and give Liverpool a game, but we just didn't turn up. And then obviously the Brighton one is a game where we should be winning, but like we literally had no defenders. So again, I'm not surprised that we didn't get a result there. And they just looked tired. They looked really tired when I was watching them. So, good, and there are some good points, there are some bad points, but, yeah, hopefully the new year, we can do much better. I mean, we started off great, 4-1 at Fulham, so, hopefully, we take that, form into Blackpool, and we don't get upset like, Nottingham Forest. Imagine another Nottingham Forest.
No, I don't think we could do, I think we could do without that, to be perfectly honest.
And, you know, you think that people are on Emery's back now. Imagine if he lost to Blackpool. Jesus.
Yeah. Well, I think, do you think they're on his back because of what we're doing in the league? Do you think maybe the Tottenham game and the Carabao Cup played a part? Is it the Ozil thing playing a part? For me, he's 6 months into, less than 6 months into a really difficult job, isn't he? You know, he's got to be backed in the transfer market. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes' time. But, you know, it seems a little early. It's fine, I think, to be somewhat critical of the decisions he makes from here or there, but not to get right on his back the other day. I mean, the Lacazette substitution against Fulham, for example, was one where it just felt a little premature.
You know, I feel like going into the season, everyone was like, okay, it's going to be this transitional period where we're probably going to be crap for the whole year. We're not probably going to do. And then we lost our first two games and like, oh, yeah, cool. It's going to be a transitional year. Then we went on this sick run and he's like hyped everyone up. And they're like, oh my God, like we might be able to actually do something like of significant this season. And then obviously we've crashed kind of back to earth. And then I feel like, again, the kind of feels of the Wenger era of, yeah, last year, December, we would be the same, would go into December and we wouldn't do that well. And I feel like they're just getting on his back like too quickly. Like, come on, like you said, it's only been 6 months and he hasn't really, really been backed in the transfer window. Like he's done actually really well to in terms of how the players that he's brought in. I mean, you've got Torreira, who's been like probably our signing of the season for like nothing. Then you've got the Lindsteiner, hasn't really worked out, but I feel like we had to kind of go that way because it just seems like we haven't got money. I mean, I don't even know what we're going to do in January. It's hearing that we haven't got any money to spend in January. So I just feel like we just need to be patient. We need to be patient because it is a transitional period. And yeah, he's only been 6 months. Let the guy work. Let him at least get it wrong. He hasn't totally got it wrong. I mean, we're fifth. I think we're only like 3 points off fourth place.
Yeah.
Like, it's not doom and gloom yet.
You would have probably taken that, wouldn't you, when the season started, if you're told, January 1st or whatever it is, you're going to be 3 points behind the top four. I think most people would have said, okay, I could live with that as a position to find Arsenal in. Leaving aside the context of it all, I don't think that there's anything particularly wrong with where we are based on the kind of squad that we've got.
Like, I feel like our target is top four, and we're literally like 3 points behind top four. So I don't understand what the issue is. Maybe there is still because some of the decisions where he takes off Lacazette, and they still feel like they still feel that from Wenger's era of it being the same. But then he took off Lacazette and Rambo came on and scored a goal. You actually booed Lacazette off. I'm sorry, the decision. And then the decision worked out. It's like, yeah, you shot yourself in the foot. Just back the manager and then we start we start making and thinking about his decisions and how the game went at the end of the game. Like, support the team to the end. Like, I'm tired of this half-hearted support when we go, when we're kind of down and it doesn't look like things are going so well. Mm. It just seems to turn on the players and the supporters. Like, I'm tired of that. We should leave that with Wenger when he left. Like, this is a new guy, like a new kind of era. Let's just get behind the boys. Like, he got really toxic when Wenger was here. So yeah, let's just get behind him. And again, he's only been here for like 2 seconds. Like, let him work.
Lacazette's reaction actually was quite good, wasn't it, when he came off? Yeah. And obviously he might have been disappointed, and
he helped
really quell the disquiet in a positive way.
Like, he helped the situation, and I feel like that's what he needed, because most of the pictures we've seen from Lacazette, which they always seem to catch, is him on the sidelines just being moody after being and I think he's probably seen that and thought, you know what, let me squash this, because it's not as bad as it is. Like, we're behind this manager and we want, you know, play for this guy and we want to get the results. And if the manager feels like this is the right decision, I've got to back it. So, yeah, he did help. He needed to do that, I feel like. And, yeah, it worked out because Ramsey came on and scored.
And as far as we can tell, the situation with Aaron Ramsey is that he is going to go to Juventus. That's what the stories are at the moment, that he's about to, well, he's going to sign a pre-contract deal with Juventus, move to them in the summer, leave Arsenal for free after 10 years. What are your thoughts on Ramsey leaving the club? And what are your thoughts on Ramsey leaving the club for free? There are two, I think, slightly separate issues.
Leaving? I'm actually quite upset that, I mean, Ramsey's been quite hit and miss, but he's also the guy that's handed us 2 FA Cups, and that people need to not forget that. Like, his goals literally secured 2 FA Cups for us. But I am sad to see him go. Would I have kept him over Ozil? Seeing how he's reacted, knowing he weren't going to sign a new deal, yet still turning up to work and still being, you know, still going 100 miles per hour for us.
Mm.
Maybe. I don't know. But then, I don't know. I think I might have kept him over Ozil. The only saying grace I feel is that he's leaving the league. I think it would have been hard to see him play for another Premier League team.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would have been difficult for me as well. And he has always said he wanted to go abroad. And, you know, if a player gets to the end of his contract and decides he wants to have a new experience, try football in a different country, I think we've got to respect that and wish him well. And I think you're dead right about Ramsey. You know, he has been inconsistent, perhaps.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's players who can produce big moments, who may not be the best players of all time, but who are there and can produce at big moments. And Ramsey has done that in 2 cup finals for us. And I kind of, maybe I'm projecting and getting a little bit ahead of myself here, but I'm kind of envisioning Aaron Ramsey's last game for us being the Europa League final.
Okay.
And
in the
84th minute, He's just gonna catch a left-footed volley from just inside the opposition half, and it's gonna fucking fizz over the goalkeeper into the top corner of the net, and that will be Aaron Ramsey's parting gift to Arsenal. Europa League into the Champions League, of course, by virtue of that. I know I'm just making up a mad scenario in my head to make myself feel good, but I'd like it.
But it's happened. Like, he's done it before. He's done it twice. Even his goal against Galatasaray.
Oh,
that is like, imagine he scored it like that.
Oh
my God, I'll jizz in my fucking pants. But yeah, I just feel like, yeah, it's actually a good club to go to as well. Imagine going from playing with Sonogo to playing with Ronaldo.
It's quite the leap. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty decent. But I'll really be sad to see him go. I mean, what do you think about? Do you feel he's a legend? Do you take him as a legend?
I think when time passes, if we're looking back on someone like Alan Sunderland, who scored in the 1979 FA Cup final and is remembered in legendary fashion because it was a legendary cup final as well, 3-2 against United. If he's a legend, Ramsey's done it twice, once against Chelsea and once against Hull. And I know it was, you know, you can say it was just Hull, but we were 2-0 down. And it was fucking exactly, extra time.
It was the game where literally this, if we had lost that final, I think I would have had to commit suicide. Because literally we hadn't won anything for time. Everyone asks me, what's your favourite ever Arsenal moment? I always say it's the 2014 FA Cup. And they're like, what? No, not the Invincibles. I said, mate, I went through success, and then to go like years without it, and the time where I saw the success, I was quite young.
Mm.
I was in it, but I wasn't really in it. Whereas I was at the stadium, I was old enough to drink, so I was drunk as fuck. And then you're really in it, and then we went 2-0 down, and I thought,
what the fuck?
Yeah, this is just not going to happen for us again. We're just going to... And then to Cazorla, even I would put Cazorla as a legend, Jesus Christ. Cazorla with the free kick to put us back in, Koscielny to equalise, and then to Ramsey just to clinch that for us after being without a trophy for so long. Mm. I watched it at the Emirates, and we went on to, you know, Holloway Road.
Yeah.
Literally stopped every car. We were opening cars and dragging people out. We didn't care. Absolutely didn't care. It was the best day of my life.
Like, I'm telling you, I know exactly how you feel. I was at the game, and you know, it had been 10 years since a trophy, and everyone went, it's just the FA Cup. Yeah, I'm telling you, nobody partied that night like it was just the FA Cup. It was more than that, because it just finally put to bed that thing that every time you open the paper, it was Arsenal's trophy drought. It was brilliant.
It was amazing. It's amazing. Mm. I think Tottenham had a flipping massive trophy drought, and they never get put in a paper. And then it's just like, why do we have to the microscope on us so much? I don't get it.
Well, it's because we're bigger than them and more important than them, with more history and success and more expectations.
I was trying to be nice, but to be honest, yeah.
That's fair enough. So, come here, let me ask you this then. Ramsey leaving for free, though, is not ideal, is it? Because he is a player that we're going to have to replace in some way or another. I wonder quite what we're going to be able to do in the transfer market to replace him, or maybe we'll look at one of these internal solutions. Emile Smith Rowe, Alex Iwobi, players who could play in a similar kind of role that Ramsey has played. But, you know, from a business point of view, it really isn't a great way to operate. You know, when you look at the players, Wilshire, Welbeck is going to go for free. Ramsey's going to go for free. Alexis went for Mkhitaryan. There have been some others as well who've left for free in the last little while. Fabianski went for free. You know, we haven't managed these situations as well as we should have.
Yeah. And well, Wenger, he was like, basically, this is the reason why, is that people are going to start letting their contracts run down. It's going to be beneficial to us. I was like, what? Okay. Mm. It's not really benefiting us. I think the only thing we can probably take it from this is that we didn't pay that much for Ramsey. So we got, two FA Cups out of him. Yeah,
we got value for money, but we didn't necessarily get what we should have gotten. If we'd had £40 million to spend, it might suit us better, but I know what you mean.
So I think we'll just have to take it as that, because, it is a big loss. I wish we could have commanded a fee for him.
Mm.
I don't know what our behind-the-door guys were thinking of letting someone like Ramsey's contract run out. Even Ozil's, like, that was mental. And then he's held us over a barrel. But, I feel like the only positives we can take from it is that, he got some service out of him, and we didn't pay that much for him.
Mm. What about the Ozil situation? How are you viewing that in the context of this season, a new manager? And, you know, I think we were all hoping that Ozil would really step up and become a hugely important player under Unai Emery. It hasn't happened. We've had the statement from his agent, which was an agent saying all the things he should have. Arsenal have sort of had a little bit of a response today with an article in the Evening Standard by James Ollie, who says, you know, Arsenal will assess the situation in the summer. It's been...
I want to know what his beef is. What's the problem? Let us know and we'll sort it out, Ozil. We just want you to play and play well. Like, what is it? Is it Emre doesn't fancy him? Is he maybe... Because I heard a lot of rumors that he was like Wenger's like teacher's pet kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, where he kind of, so maybe this new relationship, he's not really feeling it, but he's sitting on like a fat wage.
Mm.
So he's just like, you know what? Let me just run this down, and then I'll be off. Because I can't see anyone paying Ozil 350k unless he goes to like China or somewhere.
Yeah,
but I mean,
yeah, no, I'm just saying. I mean, he's not going to be off for another 2.5 seasons if he just sits on it, and I don't think he can do that, and I don't think Arsenal can let him do that. And I have to say, you know, I've been disappointed by the way it's worked out between Emery and Ozil this season, but I, you know. Those reservations aside, it feels to me like our chances of getting into the top four are much greater if we can get Mesut Ozil back to something approaching his best, even on a semi-consistent basis. I don't think at this point, after 4 or 5 years of watching Mesut Ozil, we're going to get it week in, week out, week in, week out. But if we can get it every other week, it would do us some good, I think.
Yeah. We just need to figure out what his problem is and why he feels this way. Is it an injury or is it an injury? Because there's so many stories that I actually don't know what it is. They say it's an injury. They say Emery doesn't fancy him. Like, what is it? Like, I feel like we need to get to the bottom of what it actually is and then figure out, because his agent coming out saying, yeah, Ozil wants to see out his contract. Well, of course he wants to see out his contract. He's on 350k a week. Mate, I want to see out my contract on 20k a week. Like,
I'll see out Mesut Ozil's contract for him on half of that. Yeah,
anyone would do that. So we just need to figure out what the sitch is.
Yeah, I don't think that we're going to find out until someone writes a book, because it's not in Ozil's interest to reveal what's going on. It's not even in Arsenal's interest to reveal what's going on, because you know, if there is bad stuff going on behind the scenes, it will have an impact when you do try and move the player on. And similarly for Ozil, if he's perceived as being something of a bad apple, that might affect the choices that he could make in the summer. So all we can do is hope that they sort whatever it is out and get him back to something approaching his best. And we'll keep fingers crossed for that. But what about January now? We've got a month to buy players. Would you be disappointed if all we could do this January was bring in some loan players? It seems spectacularly unambitious, doesn't it?
It does, but the thing is, I don't know. I don't even know who we'd go for. Like, because it's always the question of, cool, you're going to buy in January, but is the quality there to buy in January? Maybe that's the reason why we're only going for loan deals, because we're waiting out for the summer to get the buys that we actually want. Like, but then you hit me hearing stuff about Gary Cahill. It's like, come on, like, what are we going to do with Gary Cahill? Like, we just about get away with Mustafi.
Yeah.
And like, Gary Cahill doesn't even get into the Chelsea squad. So some of the players that are being touted, maybe not. But I don't know if we should just go with what we got and see what happens. Because if we're holding out for better players in the summer, I just don't know what we should do. I mean, I'm hearing something about the Real Madrid keeper. What's his name?
Navas. That's not happening. He played that down today. Kind of ridiculous.
That wouldn't even make sense. Like, why would you even? We've got three keepers. Why go for Navas? Like, that. What message does that put out to the keepers that you already got? Leno's been having a wobbly, and then you go and sign Navas.
Yeah, it wouldn't. You know, I don't think even the because of the way things have changed. Yeah. Imagine if the head of recruitment, having spent £25 million on a goalkeeper in the summer, went out and spent another £13 million on a goalkeeper in January. I mean, that kind of reflects really badly on him, Leno. But you know, apparently there's absolutely nothing to it. I mean, I'd love to see a defender. I'd love to see a central defender come in.
I think we need a defender. We need a winger. I don't think we have an out-and-out winger.
Yeah, I don't think we do either, but I don't know necessarily that Emery plays with that kind of a player. I do think we need something else in the forward line, because we miss what Welbeck gives us in terms of an option from the bench and depth.
Danny Mensah.
Yeah, your boy.
Yeah, my boy. Yeah, I mean, his energy is especially, that's what was needed, probably against Brighton, to be fair. But yeah, we probably need one more in there. And I feel like that's why he's reluctant to play Lacazette and Aubameyang together, because imagine him get both, like one of them injured.
Yeah.
Like, we'll be in big, big trouble.
I'm sure. So, well, this has taken a depressing turn now.
I know, Jesus. But I mean, what we can say is we're fifth, we're 3 points off fourth place. Like, we're not doing as bad as people think, I don't think.
No, and we had a 22-game unbeaten run in which, okay, we rode our luck a little bit, but it did show that we've got some character and some resilience to us, and that, you know, if we can put something similar together, you know, maybe it's fair to say that some of the other teams haven't really had a blip yet. Can we count on them having a blip? Maybe we can, maybe we can't. But if they do and we can win a few games, the complexion of the table changes very quickly, doesn't it? Because you think a few weeks ago, everyone was talking about City running away with the title. And as we're sitting here recording this, they're about to play Liverpool and they're, what, 6 points behind them, 7 points behind them in the table. Liverpool could go 10 points clear tonight if they win, which is an amazing turnaround in just a few weeks. So similarly, with much less at stake, it could turn the other way for us.
I've had an argument with a lot of Arsenal fans. Who would you rather want to win the league? Would you want Liverpool or Man City to win it?
I would rather see Liverpool win it.
And me too.
I have, and it's not just because I've got a Liverpool supporting brother. I think there's something more, maybe I'm trying to cling to something that isn't there these days in football, but it just seems to be something more
natural
or honest about the way Liverpool will have won the title. You know, having been a club in a position not too dissimilar to ours. Yes, they've built over the last number of years with Klopp, and they've put together a very good squad, and they're fighting against a team who are, you know, financial. I know Wenger always used the term financial doping, but I think there is something to that. I think there's something very unpleasant and cynical about the whole Manchester City / City Group thing, because they've got these clubs all over the world to build this nice, friendly, PR city empire funded with money that we all look at and go, you know, what the fuck? That's not right. That shouldn't happen. So I realize more people hate Liverpool than they hate Manchester City. And I get it, because there's history and there's media stuff and everything else. But just from that point of view, I think it would be better for football. And maybe that's a poxy thing to say, but that's what I think.
I mean, you just got to look at the there's like a chart that came out where it showed how much their investors invested over the 10 years. And like, Man City's investment is just stupid. Like, they've literally pumped money into them. And I think Liverpool's is kind of like 50-50, where ours is basically we buy our players. Kroenke hasn't spent a penny. But just looking at that, you're just like, I would rather Liverpool win it. Just because, it's, yeah, like you said, it's more honest. And I feel like, yeah, that Man City, they're pretty much just bought the league, really. Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I'm going to bury my head in a fucking bucket and not watch TV or read a newspaper for about 3 months afterwards. I'm not saying I'm going to like it in any way.
Be over the moon about it.
Yeah.
But it's a lesser of both evils, I think, yeah.
I think so. Well, look, we'll see what happens in that game tonight. And I look forward to your preview of Arsenal or Blackpool versus Arsenal and how you pump the team up for this particular game. Pleasure talking to you. Thanks a million.
Thanks a lot, man. Thanks.
Thank you very much indeed to Frimpon. You can find him on Twitter at FrimponLine. That is at FrimponLine. And if you're in need of G'ing up before any Arsenal game, just check out the video that he makes beforehand. It'll get you in the mood, let me tell you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Right, Arsenal travel to Blackpool this weekend for an FA Cup third round clash. All is not well with Blackpool Football Club. With me to discuss why is the head of the Blackpool Supporters Trust, Christine Seddon. Hi, Christine.
Hello.
FA Cup third round is usually one of those weekends where if a smaller club draws a bigger club from the Premier League, we get all the stories about the magic of the cup and giant killing, potential giant killing, and Arsenal have been on the end of a couple of those in our history. This weekend, Blackpool face Arsenal, and so far have sold just 2,500 tickets out of the 17,000 capacity. Arsenal have their allocation of around 5,000 tickets. There is a serious issue going on between Blackpool fans and the people who run and own Blackpool Football Club. What exactly is happening here, and why are so few fans going to attend this game at the weekend?
Right, okay, I'll try and make this as short as possible, but we have a very complex situation at Blackpool, which has been running for some considerable time. I need to stress here and now that Blackpool fans have been unhappy with the ownership of the Oystons almost since they took over. So protests against them is nothing new, and it certainly isn't anything to do with the fact that we got to the Premier League for one season and we're not there anymore. This is about the future of our football club. And what we have in our owners are people who basically have taken the monies that has come into the club, the opportunity that there is to benefit not just the club but the town as well, which should have come on the back of those many millions that came into the club when we got to the Premier League, and have basically siphoned off the money for their other non-football businesses and for their own interests. I'm not saying anything libelous there, because that was actually proved in court in 2017 that they have illegitimately asset stripped our football club.
To the tune of, just to put it in context, for a relatively small club like Blackpool, to the tune of £26.77 million.
That's correct. In fact, the minority shareholder, Valeri Belicon, who brought this legal action against the Oystons, he was awarded a total of £31.27 million. And of course, there's costs and interest on top of that. So it's a pretty appalling situation. But after a couple of years, after we'd been relegated from the Premier League, and when the accounts started to be published and we could see exactly what was going on, quite a few fans started to voice their concerns. One, in fact, did accuse them in those early days of asset stripping the club. And they started threatening their own fans with legal action. Mm. Many fans had to find tens of thousands of pounds to get them to call the dogs off, so to speak. The relationship between the owners and the fans is absolutely toxic. It has broken down irretrievably. But for Blackpool fans, the boycotting started in earnest sort of 2014, 2015, certainly at the end of the 2015 season, when our last game against Huddersfield was actually abandoned because fans ran onto the pitch. Mm. But that was born out of the sheer frustration that comes as a fan when it becomes obvious that nobody's listening to you and that there is absolutely nobody to help us. As I've already mentioned Valeri Belicon. He was a businessman that invested in the club and who did indeed, on the back of his money, it was him that got us to the Premier League in the first place. But at least he has recourse to law, and he's used that, which is great for him and hopefully will be good for us in the long term. Mm. But we have no recourse to law. We have no judge. We have no referee. Nobody is speaking for us. The football authorities have been absolutely useless when it comes to dealing with our rogue owners.
Yeah.
And I know we're not the only football club that has rogue owners, but ours are pretty unique, I think.
Do you feel let down by the Premier League, by the EFL? Because we have a situation, don't we, where the club is actually up for sale. Owen Oyston has put the club up for sale. Valeri Belokhon, as you say, is somebody who would like to take over but is prevented from doing so by EFL rules because he doesn't pass their fit and proper person test because of an alleged fraud, conviction for fraud in Kurdistan, is it, for banking irregularities?
That's right.
I don't want to say anything further on that, but where exactly does it leave you then, and what can the authorities or the people who run football in the UK do to help Blackpool Football Club?
Well, I have to say, as a trust, Blackpool Supporters Trust, we started all of this because we obviously wanted to secure the future of our own football club because of the problems we've got. But it then became obvious that this is part of a much wider problem. What I should tell you is that when we were in the Premier League, the EPL actually did ban Owen Oyston and told him that because he is a convicted rapist, a conviction which he's never spent, he is not a fit and proper person to own a football club, and they will apply those rules retrospectively. So he was told he had to sell his shares. Unfortunately, they didn't follow it up. And so by the time they decided to check whether he'd done it or not, we'd been relegated. So it wasn't their problem anymore. So they just swept it under the carpet. Now, the EFL, they also have the same test, but they refused. They say they can't apply it retrospectively. Now, how you can have two different football authorities applying the same rule in different ways is beyond me. But of course, that also brings into question the integrity of the competition, because you've now got a football owner who has absolutely no interest in investing properly in his team, because he knows if we were ever to get back to the Premier League, he would be forced to sell. So it's a shocking situation. And yeah, we feel very badly let down by football authorities who quite simply have just washed their hands of it and say, oh, well, there's nothing we can do. It's outrageous.
So where exactly do you see the future going for Blackpool? Because it feels like you're in a kind of limbo here where you have an owner who's put the club up for sale. The guy who wants to buy it can't buy it or can't be the owner of it. So is it a case that this guy is just going to hang on to it until such time as somebody comes along and makes him an offer he can't refuse? What is he actively trying to sell the club? Do you know?
It appears that he is not actively trying to sell it. He said that he was going to, but we at the Trust, we've had various interested parties contact us about the club. But nobody wants to get involved until this massive debt that Owen owes to Valeri Belokhon, he still owes well over £25 million, is settled. Now, it will be settled eventually because the courts have decreed that it has to happen. And there is actually a penal notice attached to the legal actions now. So if Owen doesn't do something about it, he could end up going back to prison. But it's just it takes such a very, very long time. And for us as fans, obviously, we're still on the outside boycotting.
Yeah.
That is very, very important. Our not a penny more is hugely important because although, yes, it's the huge sums of money that he owes to Valeri Belokhon that have financially crippled Owen Oyston, but the fact is that not a penny more is costing the club something like it's losing about £2 million or more every season now. That is unsustainable. No football owner could continue indefinitely like that. So it is very important the action we're taking, because however long it takes, it does mean that eventually Owen Oyston's football club asset isn't one that he'll be able to hang on to. So we will push him out eventually, but it's just taking a long time. And that's why we're sort of asking that, you know, when visitors come, to limit your spend, because every single penny that he gets helps him to cling on for another week, another month, even another season. And obviously television monies, you know, getting this far in the FA Cup, which as a football fan delights me, but as somebody who is having to look at the bigger picture, it also dismays me because it's enabling Owen to hang on even longer.
Sure. So you're looking for some solidarity from the visiting fans this weekend in terms of what they spend at the ground. So if you're hungry, get a pie somewhere else. If you're thirsty, have a pint before the game, that kind of thing.
That absolutely is what we're asking. I mean, we do this on a weekly basis, you know, for any visitors, but this is a significant game and obviously significant numbers will be coming. We don't expect visitors to boycott like we boycott. We totally understand that you're coming to support your team. But anything that you can do that can help support our campaign, and as you rightly say, giving your custom to the businesses around the football ground is a brilliant thing to do, because our community has been badly impacted by this as well. There are businesses that have failed, there's businesses that are struggling, so they would really appreciate your money in the pubs and the fish and chip shops, etc. It would make a big difference.
Sure.
And just withhold whatever you can from Mr. Royston. It's an awful thing to have to do, but sure. this is the situation we're in.
Well, it sounds like it's desperate times calling for desperate measures, really. So, look, I hope that some of the Arsenal fans will help you out. Has the response from other fans been good in that regard? Have you found that other fans have been... have connected with this particular issue? Because I know it's at a completely different scale and it's a completely different issue, but you know, there are Arsenal fans who look at the owner that we have, who's just taken 100% control of the club, and have some concerns about the direction he might take it in. So I think as football fans, sometimes we have to step back away from whatever rivalries there might be and look at what's best for clubs and what's best for the game.
Yeah, I've been absolutely delighted at the response we've had from fans around the country. This is above club rivalries. This is about the survival of a football club, and it's about looking at football as being part of the community. Fans are being taken advantage of left, right and centre. Premier League fans, of course, to be honest, they don't even need your money anymore because they've got all this television money coming in. But they still need you there as like television extras, because it's an increasingly global television product. So they need you to turn up for the atmosphere. But they're not really bothered what you think or what you feel, or if the times and the kickoff suit you, or any of these issues. It's just all about the money, and it's incredibly sad. So what we say is that really Blackpool's fight is football's fight, because every single football club is only one owner away from a potential disaster. And what has happened to Blackpool will eventually be catalyst to bring the change we need, not just in our ownership, but in football governance as a whole. So, you know, we really, really appreciate any support that Arsenal fans can give us. We're not just petulant people that are throwing our toys out the pram. This is a long, sustained and principled stand that we're taking. We're into our fourth season boycotting our own team. Believe me, when you're a fourth generation football fan like I am, that is really hard to do.
Yes, I was going to ask you just finally, aside from the campaign that you've been running and obviously something you feel very strongly about, and this is the right thing to do for the future of the football club, I'm interested to know what it feels like on a weekly basis or bi-weekly basis when you don't go and see the team that you've supported your entire life. What does it feel like to deny yourself the joy that football brings? I know there are issues with ownership, but for 90 minutes we can often put all kinds of things aside and invest ourselves in the game and invest ourselves in those moments which get us off our seats. So what has it been like for you and for the other fans who have chosen this very difficult path?
It's absolutely heartbreaking, and I, as part of the Supporters Trust, you know, we have a symbolic presence outside the ground before every single home game. We've done that since August 2015. We haven't missed one single game, but we stand outside, and at 3 o'clock or at kickoff, we walk away. And, you know, when it's something that's in your blood, and say, I've just said I'm a fourth generation fan. My mum, she passed away in October. She was 91. She'd supported Blackpool since she was 7. She went to the cup final in 53 on the back of her brother's motorbike. You know, it's absolutely, we have tangerine blood in our veins. And yet she started boycotting in 2015 too, and she wasn't getting any better. And she knew that she would never see her team again, but she did it anyway because it was a matter of principle. And believe me, she's not the only one. So it's a very personal thing. It hurts enormously, but we have to secure the future of our club for future generations. We have to. And so we've got to look at the bigger picture, at the long term. And if that causes us some short-term pain, then so be it, because we will win this fight. We will.
Well, look, Christine, I wish you, and I'm sure many of the people listening to this podcast will wish you every success. It's a difficult road you've chosen to go down, but as you say, you're doing it for the right reasons and for the long-term future of Blackpool Football Club. And we'll see what happens at the weekend. I can't say I wish you luck on the pitch, of course, but with everything else, really the very best of luck, and thanks for talking to me.
Thank you very much indeed.
That was Christine Seddon, who is the chairperson of the Blackpool Supporters Trust. Things are obviously not being run the way they should be at that particular football club, and you know it's bad when fans are boycotting and denying themselves the chance to see their team week in, week out. There's something very wrong with that situation. If Arsenal fans going to the game this weekend want to support the work that the Blackpool Supporters Trust are doing, get your food outside the ground. Don't spend your money inside the ground if you can help it. They obviously need things to change there as quickly as possible, and best of luck to them. In terms of the game, there isn't a huge amount of team news. Some players still being assessed. Mesut Ozil's knee injury is one of those. Hector Bellerin, Shkodran Mustafi. I'm not sure. Nacho Monreal maybe as well, but I'm not 100% sure. Unai Emery said basically we're going to take a team that will respect the competition, etc., etc., but we might give a chance to play players who aren't playing a great deal, and also to some of the young players. So maybe we could see Bukayo Saka. He could start after making his Premier League debut. That will be exciting to see what he can do in a forward position. Beyond that, there isn't a great deal of scope for rotation. The squad is not quite as deep as we would like it to be. But maybe that will be addressed in January. Maybe we'll buy some new players. Who knows? We might talk about that on the Arscast Extra on Monday with James. Just to advise you that that recording won't take place until Monday evening. So you're going to have to wait a while after the Blackpool game to get the Arscast Extra on Monday. But it will be available for you on Monday evening. In the meantime, let's hope for a good win this weekend. The FA Cup is a tournament which has given us lots of fantastic memories, lots of history. We are the club that's won it more than any other, and if we could win it again this season, I'd be quite happy with that. So let's hope for a good win, and we can start preparing them for some Premier League games of real importance. I think we got West Ham, then Chelsea, so a couple of London derbies to look forward to. Until the next time, take it easy, folks. Thanks for listening as always. Cheers. Bye bye. Yes, of course my client wants to stay. He absolutely loves this club. He loves it with all his heart. He has a special bond with everybody here, I think it's fair to say. I can tell you right now that he has absolutely no intention of leaving. Certainly not in January. This is the club of his heart. He feels very good here. He has no reason whatsoever to leave or think about leaving. Why would he leave?
Well, because this is our ladies' book club. He comes in every day, sits there, doesn't say a word, and yesterday he ate all the custard creams.
Give me 20 quid, I'll get rid.
Deal.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.